In this week's Nutrition and Life episode, I speak with Dr. Joseph Munoz, owner of Fit for Life Academy. Joey and I speak about the best exercises for blood sugar control, how to grow to like veggies, the importance of community, and training your lats correctly. I'm excited for you to listen to my conversation with Joey, and please, if you enjoyed the show, subscribe and give us a rating, or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much, and now without further ado, on to my conversation with Joey. Hello and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Joseph Munoz from the Fit for Life Academy. Welcome to the show, Joseph.
What's up, Lisa? Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure, and I would love to just start off with how you got to where you are today, how you got into the fitness and nutrition industry.
Oh, man. All right, long story, but I'll keep it short. So I've been passionate about health and fitness for a long time, probably since I was like 14 or 15 years old. And it started because, well, both of my parents were into living a pretty healthy lifestyle. My mom went to the gym, always like into cooking healthy food. And so I kind of lived in that environment as a kid. Funny enough, I was pretty overweight as a kid. So when I was 12 or 13 years old, I was almost obese. Like when I say almost, I mean like 1% body fat away from being classified as obese. And that's when my whole experience with the whole health and fitness thing started. My mom started putting me on all sorts of diets, which weren't really healthy and were super restrictive. And I've talked about my experience a number of times on my own podcast and other shows too. But through that experience, I then was introduced to the gym, really fell in love with the gym, started to learn a little bit more about having a balanced nutrition and balanced lifestyle. Ended up obviously getting my undergraduate degree in nutritional sciences, went on to graduate school because I didn't know what I could do with a bachelor's degree in nutrition. Started doing a master's degree. During my master's degree, I was a personal trainer. I really enjoyed working with people. And then I started doing my PhD almost for a very similar reason. I was like, I don't really know what to do with a master's degree in nutrition, so I'll go for my PhD. And then I got introduced to research. That experience was something I really enjoyed, really taught me how to think critically, how to think about problems slightly differently. I think my experience during my PhD is what really helps me do what I do now with social media, with like helping people think about nutrition in a more nuanced way and not just be like, oh, this food is good, this food is bad, because it's not that simple. And then after my PhD, I realized I really didn't want to continue working in an academic setting for a number of reasons. I didn't have the best experience during my PhD. I also just really missed working with people, and I enjoy working with people. I've always had a very like entrepreneurial spirit as well. So after my PhD, I reached out to Dr. Lane Norton, which you may be familiar with. And I worked with his coaching company for about, I think about 2.5, maybe 3 years. Learned the ropes of what online coaching is like. And then I decided to leave about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago now, and start my own coaching company. And the rest is history. And we're here where we are today. Obviously, along the way, I think I didn't mention anything about content creation. Funny enough, content creation is something I wanted to do even all the way back in high school. I just didn't know what to do or how to do it. And when I was in college, I made a couple of YouTube videos that were super silly. I look back on them now and I'm like, oh my God, this is embarrassing. But when I started working with Lane Norton, content creation was just part of the job. So I started creating content, talking about nutrition and exercise. And I've been doing that consistently for the past 4 years too.
That's amazing. Yeah. And I think it's very visible on your social media, on your Instagram, and in particular, the passion that you have for simplifying things for everybody, essentially picking up topics that are very relevant or that people might be talking about at the time, and then just kind of putting not just perspective on it, but also, yeah, simplifying it, because there's so much misleading information out there. And one of the things that kind of stood out to me, because you also mentioned you were a personal trainer, and one reel, I believe it was, that kind of jumped out at me amongst many others, was that you were speaking about the best exercise for blood sugar control. I would love to kind of pick up on that and kind of get go into that because I think blood sugar is a bit of a hot topic at the moment, and people might be, oh, the blood sugar diet, should I get a CGM? Like, is this worth paying attention to? So yes, please share with us your thoughts on this.
So I'll start off by saying that we could talk about this blood sugar stuff for a long time. So we'll condense it. I'll start off by saying that there's what people need to understand about blood sugar is that there's a big difference between acute fluctuations in blood sugar and chronic elevations in blood sugar, right? Acute meaning like day to day or hour to hour. It's like, hey, if I eat, yes, my blood sugar goes up. Is that a bad thing? No, not at all. It actually doesn't really indicate anything. If anything, we could argue it's a good thing. Like your body's working the way that it should, right? You're absorbing the nutrients that you're consuming from your diet. So people really focus on acute fluctuations in blood sugar. Like, hey, I ate some fruit, my blood sugar went up. Like my CGM is saying this. This means it's bad. I can't be eating fruit because my blood sugar goes up. I have to do some weird random protocol that I saw on social media, which literally has zero effect on your health. And I have, I think, like two deep dive episodes on blood sugar regulation on my podcast if you guys want to check that out. But you do not have to worry about acute fluctuations in blood sugar at all, right? And I'll share a couple of examples to paint the picture. If you eat fruit, that's going to spike your blood sugar. Is fruit bad? No. If you exercise for a prolonged period of time, that's going to spike your blood sugar because you're breaking down glycogen to produce glucose. Is that bad? We know that exercise is not bad, right? No. Is having a large meal inherently bad? Like, no, not really. We know that meal frequency, like if you have smaller regular meals throughout the day, six or seven small meals, that will spike your blood sugar less than three big meals. But we know that meal quantity or how many times you eat throughout the day literally has no effect on your health either. And that's another hot topic that people talk about, like small, frequent meals for your metabolism. It literally doesn't do anything if calories are equated. But what we do need to talk about is chronic blood sugar elevation. And this is where things get confusing because people think like, oh, if you eat sugar, it causes insulin resistance, but it's not that straightforward, right? Like chronic blood sugar elevations are not necessarily caused by carbohydrate consumption, right? Like there are people that eat very low carb diets and they're pre-diabetic or diabetic. And there are people that eat super high carb and don't have issues with their blood sugar. It's because when you have chronically elevated blood sugar, it's an indicator of underlying metabolic conditions, right? So it's typically an indicator of low-grade chronic inflammation. Inflammation seems to be the root cause of many chronic diseases, including diabetes, but other things like cardiovascular disease, even some joint-related issues, even cognitive decline. Like chronic inflammation seems to be, I won't say the sole cause, but it is at the root cause of many of these chronic diseases, right? And chronic inflammation can be caused by a number of things: stress, alcohol consumption, poor sleep, but even increases in body fat and adiposity and obesity, right? And this inflammation, when we talk about inflammation, people think inflammation means like swelling or bloating. That is not inflammation. Swelling can be a byproduct of inflammation, but bloating does not mean inflammation. Okay, like if you ate something and you're bloated, that doesn't mean you have inflammation going on. Inflammation is characterized by particular molecules in our bloodstream that are inflammatory molecules. Okay. So just the same way that we have like hormones in our bloodstream, the same way we have blood sugar, right? We have sugar in our bloodstream, we have these inflammatory molecules in our bloodstream as well. And when we produce more of them, which can occur in the circumstances that I just explained, these molecules can inhibit the function of things like insulin. And if you inhibit the function of insulin, you can't uptake blood sugar or you can't uptake blood glucose as well. And so your blood glucose stays elevated. Okay, so that's a quick rundown of what happens. Now, when it comes to exercise, resistance training is amazing for helping regulate blood sugar for a number of reasons. One, muscle is a massive reservoir for sugar, right? Because we take sugar store in our muscle as glycogen. And when we have more muscle, we can store more blood sugar as glycogen. So that's one way in which it helps with blood sugar regulation. But the other more interesting way is also that muscle contraction helps muscles absorb sugar independent of the need of insulin, right? So insulin works in this way. Like insulin binds to the insulin receptor on muscle cells, but other tissues as well. And that essentially causes this protein called a GLUT4, which is the protein that's necessary to let glucose or sugar essentially go into a cell. I hope I'm not getting too nerdy and complicated on here. But
I love it.
insulin allows the GLUT4 to move from the inside of the cell essentially to the cell wall or the outside of the cell, right? And when it's present there, it allows glucose to come inside of the cell. That's essentially how insulin works. It helps this GLUT4 move to the outside of the cell. Outside's the wrong term, technically the cell membrane, to allow glucose to come in. If the GLUT4 transporter protein is not there, glucose cannot get into the cell. Okay. And muscle contraction allows this GLUT4 to translocate to the cell membrane the same way that insulin does. So, literally, by just contracting your muscles, you can help your muscles uptake blood sugar independent of insulin. So, those are the two main reasons why resistance training and lifting weights is so beneficial for regulating blood sugar. I would say the muscle contraction effects, you can get it from cardiovascular exercise too, because like when you're running, your legs are contracting, but the degree of the contraction is not the same. And two, you're not having that chronic effect of building more muscle to have a larger reservoir. So, I would say that's why lifting weights is uniquely beneficial for blood sugar regulation.
Awesome. Awesome how you highlighted that importance and even just the mechanism as well, because I think it doesn't click for a lot of people, or often we hear exercise is good for blood sugar regulation, but not necessarily knowing how or what type. So, yeah, thank you for explaining that. And just staying on the topic of the exercise as well, there was another reel that caught my eye, and kind of for selfish reasons as well, because I am trying to grow my lats more and have always struggled. I'm connecting with my lats in terms of mind muscle connection. Have made a lot of progress with that over the last 2 years probably. But yeah, there was a reel that you did, and it was just kind of about how to train the lats correctly. And of course, I'm aware of the fact that it's always a little bit more tricky speaking about exercise execution and everything on a podcast when people might not always be watching. But yeah, maybe you can still give us some pointers.
Sure. I think maybe we could talk about some of the main mistakes that I see, because that's probably a little bit more applicable too. So, first mistake I always see is people not training through a full range of motion, specifically in the stretched position, right? Like we know that when you stretch muscles, according to a lot of new research, it seems to be uniquely beneficial for muscle growth. Like it's probably better to use slightly lighter weight and allow yourself to train through a greater range of motion and be able to maximally stretch muscles. And when you think about back exercises, let's talk about rows or like pull-ups, and so those are the two most common ones. And if you know pull-ups or pull-downs, the same thing. If on a pull-down or a pull-up, you're not coming to a dead hang, right? Or a pull-down, like letting the weight completely pull you up, like you're not getting a full stretch in the back. So we can argue that you're not getting the best stimulus for the lats, right? For a row, same thing. Like people don't fully extend their elbow. They don't let their shoulders protract forward, right? And you want to get that so you fully stretch the lats. Now, another big mistake that I see. So first mistake, fully stretch, full range of motion, right? Another mistake that I see is related to intensity. Because when we talk about full range of motion, a lot of people understand that like full range of motion is important. And if you think about a full range of motion on a pull-up, it's like dead hang, and then on the other end, it's like touching your chest to the bar almost, right? On a row, it's bringing the row or the handle all the way to your belly. And for back movements, you don't actually need to train through a full range of motion. And as you fatigue, you're not going to be able to train through a full range of motion because back exercises are uniquely difficult in the shortened position. The shortened position being like when you're closer to your chest, right? So on a pull-up, the stretch position's at the bottom. On a row, the stretch position's when your arm's fully extended. The shortened position is the opposite, when the weight's touching your body, right? That part is the most difficult part of the movement on back movements. And that part is where the muscles are least stretched. So as we fatigue, it is harder to touch the chest on all back movements. And it's also not necessary, right? So if you stop the set when you can't touch your chest anymore, you're probably leaving gains on the table because you could probably do another 3 to 5 reps in just like partial range of motion. So typically, I do think it's important to like standardize reps just to be able to like know if you're making progress or not, because you can like keep going until you can barely pull it, right? I typically like doing back movements until I can't bend the elbow more than 90 degrees. So I'm not sure if this is like a visual podcast or it's just audio.
It will also be on
Okay.
YouTube, yes.
Great. Yeah. So like if I row, if my upper arm is parallel with my body, I'll keep going, right? Until I can't do this anymore. Like I'm not bringing it all the way to my chest, but as long as I can pull at least halfway, I'm going to keep going to get that stimulus on the lats. Another thing that I would say I see people make a mistake on is not allowing the back to round, specifically on rowing movements, right? It's like people want to stay super upright, chest up, shoulders retracted, which is fine, but then you never get that full stretch on the lats, right? So at the bottom of back movements, and I think this just happens naturally on a pull-up, you kind of release and everything relaxes and you get that stretch on the lats. But on a rowing movement, I'm sure you've seen it, people stay super upright and they don't get that full stretch. So on rowing movements specifically, I would say at the bottom, allow your back to round as much as possible. Like let your back round. That's going to stretch out your lats even more. It's going to help you feel more of a stimulus in the lats as well. And people are always like, isn't letting your back round a bad thing? Isn't going to cause injury? Like it depends on so many variables, right? It's load dependent. First and foremost, when you're doing a row, you're not really loading your spine, right? Because it's perpendicular to your body, the line of force. You wouldn't want to let your back round a ton on something like a deadlift because that's axial loading. It's very different, right? But if you're just doing something like a row, it's not going to inherently be harmful in any way to allow your back to round, especially if you get used to doing that and you strengthen your body in that position. And the last mistake that I would say is like where people pull to, right? Like specifically on a rowing movement, a lot of people pull like to their chest, right? Their elbows are very flared out. If your elbows are very flared out, if you're rowing very high, like onto your chest, you're mainly going to be using the muscles of the upper back, right? The traps, the rhomboids, the rear delts, like you'll get some lat engagement, but the lats are not going to be the limiting factor. Whenever you really want to target your lats, one, I recommend keeping your elbows tucked in rather than flared out, right? Even on a pull-up, I talk about this. Like instead of doing a wide grip pull-up, I like doing a neutral grip where the elbow's slightly more tucked in because I'm going to use the lats more, right? And on something like a row, it's as simple as just rowing to your belly button. Right? Don't row to your chest, just row to your belly button. And if you just use that one cue, your elbows are going to be tucked in naturally. So hopefully that helps.
Yeah, those were some amazing tips. I specifically like the explanation on the range of motion because, well, I will admit that, for instance, of course, I'm trying to get into full range of motion, but I have been kind of stopping when I thought, oh, I'm not really able to pull the handle or whatever all the way in. I'm going to stop at this point. So just that cue of like, hey, there is still some value of continuing to go on in that
Yeah.
stretch position. That's really, really helpful. So yeah, thank you for that. And in terms of the positioning as well, I do think with the rounded back, especially if you have some kind of support as well, which I have actually found helpful. Like if you have something that's chest supported as opposed to like a bent over row, I find it a little bit more difficult to like let your back round without that affecting the lower spine or so. But if it's like a seated row or you even like a T-bar row or something like that, where you're like, okay, yeah, I can actually hunch forward and there's absolutely no harm for my lower back. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, apart from that, you have so many helpful tips just when it comes to like lifestyle creation for sustainable weight loss or sustainable weight maintenance as well. And I don't know about you with your coaching company, Fit for Life or so, but I definitely hear quite often from people that come to us like, oh, I don't really like protein or I don't really like vegetables or whatever. And you, I saw also saw you speaking about like how we quote unquote grow to like something. And I would love for you to share those strategies because I think they're helpful for anything in life. Like if you don't like something yet, but you want to grow to like it or create a habit around something, like how do we go about
Oh my God, there's so much to talk about here.
that?
I would start off by saying that a lot of people say they want something and they don't necessarily really want it, right? It's like, hey, if you say you want to eat a little bit healthier and lose some weight and feel better, but like you're unwilling to even try a vegetable. Like you don't really want it, right? You got there. There's aspects of everything in life that you don't like, but you do because it contributes to the thing that you want to achieve, right? The example I use, like, do I like sitting at this desk for 8 hours every day? No, right? I don't like sitting here all day, every day, but I do it because it contributes to my overall business goals, right? Like, I love work. I wish I could be maybe socializing a little bit more, moving a little bit more, working with people. But the nature of my work is I sit here in this office, but I do it because it's part of what I do. And I learn to enjoy it because I see the positive outcomes that it gives me, right? And so I think we need to have the same sort of approach when it comes to trying things that we don't like when it comes to nutrition or exercise and being open-minded. I think one thing that I'm big on and I talk to clients about often is perspective, right? I think we have a lot of control over how we view and perceive things, right? Like you and I might experience the same thing and perceive it very differently. Some people innately perceive things a little bit more negatively. Other people's perhaps innately perceive things a little bit more positively, right? Somebody might eat a vegetable and immediately think like, oh, this tastes horrible. I hate this. Somebody else might think like, I don't like the taste of this, but it contributes to what I'm trying to do. And maybe I'm going to try it a couple of different ways. And I can see how, if I start to eat this more frequently, even though I don't necessarily like it right now, over time, I might start to develop a taste for it. Right. And that's essentially comes down to the topic of having a growth mindset, Lisa, right? Of understanding that there are going to be obstacles. There are going to be things that are difficult, that feel uncomfortable. You have to be able to face those things. You have to understand that these are opportunities to learn and grow and change as a person, right? And I think it's helping people develop that framework and that mindset that is really important for long-term success when it comes to the whole health and fitness stuff. And one thing that we do, because like this stuff is hard, right? Like this stuff is different than just telling somebody, hey, this is what you should eat. Hey, this is what your exercise program looks like. I feel like oftentimes people hire a coach for that. Like, what does my diet look like? What does my training look like? But what they don't know that they're signing up for is the personal development piece, right? Because the personal development piece is what's necessary to be able to eat and exercise consistently the way that you should. Without that personal development piece, it doesn't matter if I tell you these are your macros and this is your diet and like this is your workout plan, because you're just not going to do it consistently and you're not going to enjoy it. Right. And I think one of the things that we do really well that contributes really positively to people's shift in their identity is the amount of emphasis that we place on our community specifically. Right. I used to, when I first started working with clients, it was just one-on-one and there was really no community aspect. And due to certain experiences that I've had and experiences that I've had from talking to different clients and even like different coaching programs that I've joined myself, I've seen how powerful community can be, right? And I see how powerful it is with our clients as well. So we don't just do one-on-one coaching. That's an aspect of our program, but community is a huge aspect of our program. So we ask our clients to share wins, share recipes, share when they're struggling with stuff in the community itself, help support each other. And I think being part of a community of like-minded individuals really helps with staying consistent with the things that you're doing. And I think if you stay consistent with the things that you're doing long enough, you eventually see the positive outcomes and that builds internal rapport, right? In addition to that, we do a lot of like group calls. We do three group calls every week, and those are so beneficial for the stuff that we're talking about. Oftentimes, whenever a client is struggling with consistency, with motivation, with adherence, I always like to think about like, what's the one thing you're going to do that's going to have the biggest return, right? Because like, hey, there are a million things you can do, but what's the one thing that we should really focus on that's going to essentially have a cascading effect on all the other things that you should be doing? And whenever a client is struggling, I usually tell them like, hey, can you commit to coming to one group call every week? And those that do, I see how beneficial it is because there's something really powerful about hopping on a call like this. I wish it was in person. We obviously don't do it in person, but hopping on a Zoom call with 8 to 10 people, everybody goes around, shares some wins. Everybody goes around, shares what they're struggling with. We do Q&As. We take a deep dive on what people are struggling with. This person gets to hear from that person like, oh, I'm not alone. They're struggling with the same thing. And the strategies that they're sharing are things that I can implement. So I think having that community aspect, being part of a group, is invaluable for the stuff that we're talking about, which is just being okay or acknowledging, not even acknowledging, adopting the mindset that there are things that I don't like, there are things that I currently don't do that I need to be doing, and I need to be able to do these things consistently. I would say community is probably the most powerful thing by far.
That is so cool. I did not see this question go down that road, but I love it. And I didn't actually even know that your coaching was like also or very heavily focused around community. And I think that's a really, really great because from so many clients in the past and present as well, I know that feeling like they don't get sufficient support from their immediate environment is often something that I hear, or even just the question of like, oh, do you have any other clients that struggle with this? Or do you have anybody else who feels like that? Like just knowing like, hey, I'm not that weird person who's the only one who's having issues with XYZ. That is so cool. And I love that you're encouraging that growth in that way.
Well, here's the thing, Lisa. Like, when it comes to strat, because you mentioned, like, what strategies do you use for people that don't like vegetables, for example, right? There's a number of strategies. We can say, like, hey, cook it this way, or use this sauce, or mix it in this dish. But the thing is, if the person still has the wrong mindset, they're still not going to do it. Right. So that's why I really emphasize the community thing, because sometimes we'll hop on a group call and somebody will ask a question like that, like, hey, I know I should be eating more veggies, but like I maybe have half of a serving a day. I just don't like them. And it's very different, like a coach telling you somebody something who's like an expert and it's like a top-down communication versus somebody saying that in a group call and another client saying, hey, I actually like started last month and I really wasn't liking veggies. And Joey or whoever, some of the other coaches told me that I should try it this way. And like I roasted them and then I mixed it with this sauce that's a low calorie sauce and actually tastes really good now and I love it. And the other person's like, oh, that's cool. You were where I was just a month ago. You're not like this person who's so far away from me and you had the same struggles and you figured out how to do it. And now you're sharing that with me. And now I made a friend, I made a connection. I understand that it's doable because it doesn't seem that far away. Like, there are so many benefits to the group aspect that I think helps so much more than any particular strategy, really.
That's really super, super cool. And just that emphasis on growing a growth mindset. I've said this before on this podcast. I used to be someone like 15 years ago, I had a very fixed mindset. And I think people sometimes think that fixed and growth mindset is something that you're born with, like one or the other. But even there, like you can grow to have a growth mindset. Like even just becoming aware of where you're at with that. And I mean, from what it sounds like, what you're saying as well, like that growth mindset is going to have carryover into all areas of life, not just in the sense of I can grow in this nutrition journey, but just anything. And I've said this on here before also. I read a study not too long ago where it was like, oh, what's the most the skill that most companies should hire for. It's not like communication or both. Yeah, of course, all that is important. But in the end, it came down to resourcefulness. So, like, just having that mindset of, I'm gonna figure it out. It doesn't matter. That could mean I'm gonna call a person. That could mean I'm gonna Google it. That could mean I'm gonna something. But just not being like, oh, I don't know how to do that. Someone else show me. And yeah, it's exactly that. That's kind of what you're fostering within this group.
Totally.
Very cool. And I mean, we're recording this in December. It's not going to air for a couple of weeks. And so people might have already started whatever they want to start in the new year. But nonetheless, you and I both know that many people might be inclined to do something more aggressive. I would love to hear from you. What do you encourage your clients or potential clients to head into the new year with, like mindset wise or nutritionally or just in any kind of aspect?
Yeah, so it's tough because everybody's so different, right? Like, I think it's also hypocritical to say, like, don't do this when I've experienced so many things too. And I would say that a lot of the negative experiences with things that I've done, like this diet or that diet, or like intermittent fasting, keto, or like doing two workouts a day, like I've done it all. I'm sure you've probably experienced a lot of those things as well, have really contributed to where I am now. Right. So I think any action is better than no action. Right. Like maybe even if you go down the wrong path, at the very least, you learn from it, hopefully. Right. But if we're talking about like what can you do optimally, I'm a big proponent of starting with movement. Like if you don't exercise at all, Just get some movement in. I would say it's funny because at my formal education is in nutrition, but I'll tell anybody I think movement is way more important than what you eat, unless you don't have food to eat and you're starving. And that's a different different topic altogether. But like, if you're eating food and like maybe it's not the healthiest diet, but you have enough food to sustain yourself, like just start with some movement. Do two or three workouts a week, just stuff that you enjoy. And then when it comes to like adding things over time, I'm a big believer of instead of going 0 to 100 and trying to do everything overnight, although I think there are some people that can do that, but most people can't, just take a very stepwise approach to health and fitness, right? What we do with clients is like we identify all of the habits that we should be working on, right? With nutrition, it comes down to protein, fiber, having a regular meal schedule, breakfast, like all the things that we know people should be doing. And we just do one a week. And that has been such a powerful and successful method because it's really easy to do and it's sustainable. It's like, hey, this week we're working on protein. All you need to work on is protein. How easy is it to hit your protein goal if that's the only thing you need to focus on? You don't need to focus on five other variables, right? You will, just not right now. It's like, hey, we got the protein thing down. Do you feel confident you can continue eating this much protein? Yeah. All right, now let's add fiber. All right, now you're doing protein and fiber. But you just have to focus on the fiber because you already developed the protein habit, right? And now let's add calories and now let's blank. And I generally recommend taking that approach, even though it's a slower approach, because the likelihood of success is that much greater, right? Like if you ask somebody, like, do you want to, would you rather make way faster progress towards an objective weight loss goal, but there be a much higher likelihood that you rebound because you couldn't do it correctly, it didn't feel sustainable, it was overwhelming? Or do you rather just take a little bit of a slower approach, which is still fast because even if it takes you a year, like a year goes by really fast, right? Would you rather take a slightly slower approach, but it be bulletproof? Like you're actually going to make progress, albeit slower, but the progress that you make is sustainable and you're not going to backtrack. I would say most people would probably take the latter.
Yeah, some really, really great advice there, Joey. I think it's awesome that kind of like habit stacking on, well, no, that's not habit stacking, but like habit building, I guess, and just focusing on one thing at a time is so valuable. And yeah, we do have a part percentage of people listening also that are maybe more, let's say, growing coaches or people that are maybe coming from the en other end of the spectrum, working out 6 times a week, restricting calories, or like really perhaps like myself as well, sometimes getting caught up in the minutia. And so I'm curious what kind of tips you have for that kind of person that's listening, or maybe even a coach as well who's wanting to develop their business. Like what kind of recommendations do you have for that person, or even for your past self as well?
Do you mind providing maybe like a specific example?
Yeah, let's say someone is exercising 6 days a week. Let's go with that, and
Okay.
just kind of yeah, really super super focused on calorie control, macro control. They're not necessarily feeling that great all the time, but at the same time, they can't really get out of their skin. They might be coaching a few people, and just overall, they want to feel better. They want to grow some muscle, be healthy in the new year, and build their business as well.
So maybe somebody who's obsessing a little too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I think this goes back to what I was saying earlier too. Like, I don't believe that there is like, you should do this for everybody across the board, right? I feel like people should do what they want to do. And like, there are people who want to train every single day and want to be obsessive over every single little calorie. And that's the way they want to be. I'm like, fine, right? I don't think you need to be more relaxed if that doesn't align with your lifestyle or your goals. Like, if you want to be super strict about stuff, that's perfectly fine, right? I'm not super strict with my nutrition and my training, but I'm really strict with other aspects of my life, like work, right? Like I get to work at the same time every day. No, like there's no excuses, and I work till the same time. And like I'm very strict about that because that's the thing I like being strict about. So that's first and foremost. Like if somebody likes being that way, I don't think there's anything wrong with it, right? I would say that most people don't like being that way. And so what we want to do is help them find balance. I would just say to somebody like that, like, I think it's probably beneficial for them to work with a coach as well, right? Because, like, it's hard to get out of your own head. I get in my own head. I'm not perfect. Like, everybody gets in their own head. But I think, not to be redundant, but again, the communication part is key. right? Like, even if you're an expert in the space, and I'm going to say quote unquote expert, because there's a lot of people that say they're experts and they're not. But regardless, the point is that we're all human, right? We're all human. We all have our own internal struggles. We all have maybe harmful is the wrong word, but thoughts that aren't constructive or positive. We all have behaviors that are self-destructive. And I do think the best way to work through those things, again, not to be redundant, but it's having a community or a circle of people that like are doing the thing that you want to do, that you can relate to, that you can communicate. And I think those things just improve slowly over time. I don't think there's really any strategies where it's like, hey, do this and it's going to be better overnight, because that just doesn't really occur with the mental health space, right? Like, it's different than telling somebody, eat this many calories and you'll lose weight. But if you're obsessing over every single little calorie, if you feel bad if you miss the gym one day and you're already working out 6 or 7 days a week, like it doesn't matter what I say here, right? I could say like, hey, relax, hey, it's not that big of a deal, but like those things aren't going to hit home. I think it's really the consistent communication and the consistent interaction with people who are doing the same thing. And I think it's important to surround yourself with people who are doing the thing that you want to do and not doing the thing that you are doing, right? Because if
Oh,
you
I
just
love
surround the
that. Yeah.
set, yeah, if you surround yourself with more people who are doing the exact same thing you're doing, like they're not really going to be able to help, and those communication, those conversations are not going to go in the direction that they should to help you break free from that. I would say those tips are very similar to the business thing as well, right? Like, because you mentioned some of these people might be coaches, they might be working with people, they want to grow their business. It's funny because I would say sometimes I'm definitely very, very hard on myself when it comes to business. But it's because, like, right now, I would say my business is probably the most important thing to me. Like, I don't work out 7 days a week for 2 hours and eat super clean for everything because that's just not my priority, right? And that's why I said earlier, like, if it's somebody's priority, good for them. Like, if this person is a competitive bodybuilder, like, yeah, you should probably be doing that, right? Because if you don't do that, then you're not going to look the way that you should be looking on stage. And like, that's not my goal, so I don't do that. So I would say, you know, this term people throw around a lot the term balance. And I think balance in the sense of like all things in your life should be equal is nonsensical. I think you need to identify what your priority is. And if you really want to be successful in that one thing, you do need to attack it relentlessly. And that might mean that the things that you do might be a little bit odd to other people, right? Like if you're a competitive bodybuilder and you weigh every single thing that you eat and you don't ever cheat on your diet and you work out 7 days per week, the normal person's like, that's weird, right? If you work freaking 10 to 12 hours a day, and like this is what you do, and you want to grow your business, that's going to be weird to most people. And I think it's important to just accept that it's okay to be weird, right? It's okay to be different if you want to do something differently. Now, I would say it's also important to be kind to yourself and not be too hard on yourself and not stress yourself out, but almost from the sense of like that contributes to longevity, right? Because I know that when I'm too harsh on myself, and I get really maybe I let my emotions get the best of me when it comes to business related stuff and things not going the way that I want it to. I know that that doesn't do anything positive for what I'm trying to accomplish, right? I know I'm going in a million different directions here, but hopefully some of those tips are helpful.
I love them all, and my favorite one really is the clarity aspect, because I think that's often where people struggle the most with. They see so many great things and they think they should have it all. They should have like the perfect body at all time, whatever perfect means to that person. They should be excelling in business. They should be doing this and that. And so like just being like acknowledging, okay, right now is probably not the time to be ultra shredded while I'm aiming to grow my business mainly, or right now is not the time to. So I love that, because yeah, sometimes that desire to have, quote unquote, have it all in that aspect, it just blurs everything and pulls you in a million different directions, causing you to not really excel at either of your or any of your goals.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, in general, I think that's also comes down to like reflecting more, and as you said, like having a coach that you communicate with regularly, perhaps, or even people can do that, on their own if they journal, if they go for walks, if they meditate and gain clarity that way. But I actually think that it often struggles or often fails, even just by the point that we don't take the time to get really clear on what it is that we want. Like that person that I was describing, they might want to be really shredded, but at the same time, they often come to me then and saying like, I don't feel good and my hormones are out of whack and all that. So, okay, yeah, well, you've been prioritizing aesthetics for such a long time, you kind of let your health aspect fall a little bit behind, and it's really just popping out now because you're going through perimenopause, or your life is throwing you some extra curveballs. So yeah, I think that that's a really, really good point, just in the sense of gaining that clarity. And I mean, for you personally, I'm curious what's something that excites you about 2025, and for your company as well. I'm sure you're building and growing something, brewing something.
Oh my God, yeah. So excited for 2020. I laugh when I say this because like I don't really get excited from many things in that sense. Like I'm a very, and my wife says this about me, I'm a very like emotionally neutral person. I don't really get too like down. I also don't get too excited. So like yeah, it's a great question to ask me because I haven't put much thought into it. I would say the things that I'm excited about, because to be honest, Lisa, like I don't necessarily get too motivated or excited by like particular goals. I like just like I really do enjoy the day-to-day, right? So like, hey, I work on my business every day, I get to work out, like I get to spend time with my family. Like that's what I enjoy. And like I'm just looking forward to doing more of that, right? As far as things that I'm working on, so obviously I'm not trained in business. So business is something that I try to learn a lot about. And we're working, this is going to get into nerdy business stuff, but we're working on developing systems to be able to track data for our business, like marketing data, sales data, like knowing what the lifetime value of a client is, what churn is like. And so we're putting a lot of work into that to hopefully first quarter of next year be more strategic with the decisions that we take. Because right now we're just like, hey, I feel like we should do this. Why? I don't know. It sounds like a good idea. All right, let's do it. It's very like emotionally driven. It's not necessarily data driven, right? So we're trying to build on that right now. We're investing in a mentor who's going to be helping us with a lot. So I'm excited for those things that are going to be starting in January. And then just really excited to spend time with family, honestly. We just had our daughter 2 weeks ago, so we have a 2-week-old baby.
Congratulations.
We have a thank you. We have a 2-year-old as well. So nothing in particular, like I'm looking forward to this one thing, just really continuing to grow both as a business person, as a dad, as a, I was gonna say a fitness person, but honestly, I'm not growing much in the fitness space anymore. I've been doing this whole fitness thing for like 15 years consistently, and now I kind of just go to the gym and I push myself because I do enjoy it. But I used to have way more specific goals around fitness that I just don't really have anymore.
But you know what? I actually love that, and I think that people that enjoy their day to day, those are the people that are able to be most consistent. And of course, we know that people that are most consistent with anything, whether it's their training, nutrition, or business, are usually able to outwork anybody who goes through various extremes and sprints and whatever. So yeah, thank you for sharing that with us and for just sharing everything else you have given us today. I'm of course going to put all your handles in the show notes, but maybe you want to shout out your socials as well.
Yeah, sure. I just want to say thank you for having me on. I really enjoyed this. I am usually the one interviewing people on my podcast too. I actually don't do many podcasts, but I want to do more because they're just fun and it's a good way to connect with people. So thank you for having me on. As far as my socials, just Dr. Joey Munoz everywhere. And for people that are listening and enjoy what I'm talking about, if you want to learn more, I have a free ebook that I give out that you could literally find all over my profile because I'm always talking about it. So if you guys want to learn more, I encourage you to go ahead and download that. If you just comment the word blueprint on any of my content on Instagram, I have a little automation that will just send you the ebook in a DM. So hopefully you enjoy that.
Amazing. Thank you, Joey. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Joey. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And one more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening, and don't forget, life is too short to be in a body you don't feel good in.